Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here for your WWE SmackDown audio review. And Jake and I, this is the second time we've been together this week. Jake joined me this Thursday, along with Will Pruitt, for the .NET Weekly Show. Jason Powell is on vacation this week. He and Brian Fritz, Wade Keller of PW Torch, and a bunch of other people, including Jake as well, are going to go see Jerry Lynn's last show in Minnesota this weekend. And Jason took the time off to hang out with Brian Fritz from Between the Ropes, who was up there visiting with Jason and going to that last show as well. And so left me in charge. So Jake and Will, who do the .NET Countdown every week, where they look at the best and the worst in professional wrestling for every week, they joined me for .NET Weekly. And we kind of merged some of the Countdown in there. You know, .NET Weekly is our flagship show. We review all the news of the week there. We often break news that's not made its way to the site yet. And that's just a little sample of all the audio that we produce here each week on the site. Jake and I do this all access for both our members and our non-members, but the vast majority of our shows, including that .NET Weekly show and including the .NET Countdown, also Jason Powell's Q&A audio, his WWE Raw review, and most of the time Will Pruitt's TNA Impact review, those are exclusive to our members. But you can become a .NET member today for just $7.50, and all you got to do is head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET Member Sign Up, and we will get you started. If you know you want to be there for a year, take that annual option. We will knock $2 off each month, knock it down to $5.50. You'll get access to all those audios, plus the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, the .NET member blog section, and all of those things are just up right now as we're closing in on WrestleMania tape. We got 2 weeks left until that show. And WWE has stalled the past week or so with some of their build. This week's Raw did not do a good rating, was roundly panned by everybody across the internet. And so we were left here with SmackDown this week. And so I'll ask you, did they right the ship any coming out of SmackDown? Did SmackDown help what Raw kind of left off? Was it more of the same, or did SmackDown hurt the build even more than Raw did?
No, I don't think it hurt anything. I'm still kind of flabbergasted by the level of, replays and just non-original content that makes it onto SmackDown. What we did see this week was, a little bit more gelling of some of the undercard matches in the show, and perhaps the introduction of another one with Fandango and Chris Jericho. So there was some movement forward here, but I didn't leave the show feeling it was spectacular. There seemed to be kind of the same formula as Monday, where there was nothing necessarily really bad about it, but you didn't really leave feeling like you'd watched a show that would normally fit on the road to WrestleMania. I don't know, it was just kind of middle of the road, maybe a little subpar for me.
What we had this week was a show that was primarily devoted to the six-man match, the Shield versus Sheamus, Randy Orton, and who their new partner was going to be. Obviously, Ryback was the guy announced last week. He was removed from that match on Monday. He will face Mark Henry at WrestleMania. So who was going to be the third guy here? No real surprise. They opened up with Miz TV. They picked a Big Show. They set up some tension between Big Show and Sheamus throughout the show, and they played on that at the end. We got an appearance from the Shield at the end. So, Jake, that was the primary focus of this show. Does the Big Show, we thought last week that this might be what happens. You talked about it in your hit list. I talked about it in the show report and on audio. It played out. This is what we expected that was going to happen. So did that hurt it in any way? Is this one of those situations where obvious doesn't matter because it was still the right choice? And do you like the idea of Big Show here better than you did Ryback, or would you rather have Ryback?
I like the Big Show idea better simply because I thought they could introduce more tension into the babyface team with Big Show, and I could have, forgiven the obviousness of it if the execution would have been fantastic. But I didn't leave the opening segment or any of the intervening promos feeling, like there was a whole lot of intensity here. I mean, Big Show, I must admit, in his brief backstage vignette when he was talking to Matt Stryker, did, seem to come off with the right tone and sincerity that you would like to see when he was trying to convince him that he was trustworthy. But Sheamus in particular just really hit the wrong notes for me tonight. I don't know. I think his promos were all wrong, and it didn't really help the tension for me. It was just too clownish.
Yeah, Sheamus was over the top. And part of it, too, I think, is, and they mocked this, Miz mocked this in the opening segment, Randy Orton is playing the voice of reason here, and, like, just that sentence alone makes my head hurt. Why Randy Orton? Why is he, I mean, I to me, it screams, well, that means that's because Orton's going to be the guy that turns, and maybe it doesn't happen at WrestleMania, but it at least gets, the seeds get sowed at WrestleMania. So, I mean, to me, that's what it is, but outside of that, I mean, Miz was right when he mocked this as Randy Orton is the voice of reason. How is that even possible? Do you think I think that Sheamus was over the top. I'm not trying to take anything away from him as far as how far he pushed he pushed it too far. But do you think that, you know, when Randy Orton is your measuring stick for normalcy, a lot of stuff can get bizarre really fast. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I see where you're coming from. I mean, it is kind of bizarre that Orton would be, you know, the voice of reason or the peacemaker in any situation. You know, he's the quick strike viper. You know, he's, you know, got a hot temper. He goes off in an instant. You know, they made that basically one of the cornerstones of his career. So for him to be the measured and rational one makes little sense. And then you had, Sheamus just, you mentioned being over the top, but he seemed like he was always in the wrong tone. He was never in the right mood for the, you know, for what he was saying. It's like his expressions and his demeanor didn't match what he was saying. And Big Show, I thought he did the best out of all three of them. I thought he at least hit the right notes in terms of sincerity. But, it was kind of bizarre. I think, you know, Sheamus and Orton here might be the least interesting part of this whole six-man tag.
Yeah, I don't know. Sheamus, like, I wanted to boo Sheamus by the end. He came across as that jerk guy, you know what I'm saying? That guy where you're like, come on, dude, just shut up. Like, he went so far that I kind of wanted to boo him and cheer Big Show by the end, and I don't think that's what they were going for at all. But it's been the problem we've talked about with Sheamus many times, that Lucky Charms character can blow up in his face, and this is one of those times. We'll talk more about this because it eats up the entire show, and if we get everything out right now, there won't be anything to say really during the show. The other things we got, we try to pull out the big moments in the show or the things that matter, certainly for WrestleMania now that we're in WrestleMania season. The other moment, Mark Henry Ryback had another moment, anything you can do, I can do better sort of thing, but with Ryback actually hitting a clothesline on Henry this time to give him an opportunity to stand strong, get some of his heat back from last week when Henry knocked him down. We talked about this in .NET Weekly this week, Jake, so I don't want to belabor the point, but, Henry and Ryback could be a very surprising match. They're both very strong, and they're both very big. And Ryback has struggled at times, especially with the bigger guys, you know, doing some of his power moves. But Henry has been really good as of late, even going back to before his injury, and they picked up right where he left off when he came back from the injury. This could be a surprising match for people. I don't expect it to be a five-star match by any stretch of the imagination, but don't sleep on this match so much. You might get surprised a little bit. Do you agree?
Yeah, you know, I was hoping they'd take a more conservative approach in terms of keeping them apart a little more. You know, I think the major attraction here, like we went over a bit on .NET Weekly, is the fact that you have these two monsters and they've never been in the ring before with each other. And, you know, the major attraction point to me is that, you know, that first lockup, the tension that you feel before, you know, the uncertainty that kind of grips you when you're trying to figure out which of these two guys is going to, you know, be able to pull it off. So I think they take, you know, ever so much steam off of it, the more times they interact in the ring before WrestleMania. But, you know, they can obviously turn that spigot off at any time. But the actual, you know, interaction I thought was good, and I'm in agreement with you. You know, I think there's plenty of reason to believe that these guys could provide this at WrestleMania.
And then the other, I guess, moment that came out, there's just a couple of things, a couple of matches we should probably look for. One, that certainly looks like it's going this way, and I don't understand it on some level, but on the other hand, he's been the only guy that's been good about this gimmick that we've seen so far. I we can pretty much know that at this point, don't you think, Jake, that it's going to be Chris Jericho versus Fandango or Fandango at WrestleMania? Fandango interfered, easy for me to say, with Jericho's match tonight with Jack Swagger. And, I mean, there's only 2 weeks left, but it sure does. All signs point to that now as being the case, yeah?
Yeah, I would certainly think so, based on what we saw tonight. And it wasn't bad either. I mean, I'm just as critical of what we've seen of Fandango so far as anybody. But, I thought when he got into the, into the ring and insulted Jericho that it would actually, he didn't look half bad doing it. And the top rope move was decent, and I still have reservations about the character, but I at least think we're going to get a good match, and that's important, too.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you something about the Fandango character. I mentioned this, I think it was at .NET Weekly, I know I've said it before. One of the things that kind of strikes me about this character, as much as I disliked what they've done with him, one of the things that stands out, and it may just be the way Johnny Curtis plays it, it may just be dumb luck, or it might be a plan, but I've noticed that he's doing this whole name gimmick thing. When the person can't say his name, and after he's kind of explained it to him at first, we get kind of a crack in that veneer of cultured ballroom dancer, sexy voice. His voice will kind of drop a little bit. He'll take the air out of it and get frustrated, and you can see it. And in this attack on Jericho, he pounced on him, pounded on him, screamed at him, say my name. Do you think that's the plan with this character? That yes, it's ridiculous, because I'm just trying to think how a dancer like that, a ballroom dancer, supposed to get over, even as a heel. I think it draws go-away heat, and if that's your whole gimmick, is that ballroom dancer. But do you think that this is kind of a Jekyll and Hyde? Because I don't want to say that, but you know what I'm saying, where it's almost like he's, the guy he really is this mean-spirited, nasty, screams-at-people kind of guy, but he puts on these airs of being this cultured, sophisticated ballroom dancer, or am I overthinking the hell out of this?
No, I can see where you're going. It almost reminds me a little bit of, the Mr. Perfect character, or maybe even, slightly of Rick Rude. I mean, obviously we're nowhere near the longevity or quality of that yet, but I can see the character similarities in the sense that they're these just massive narcissists. And when, somebody sort of disrupts their whatever distorted reality, they kind of lose it. And I could see that working for Fandango. So, yeah, I mean, if that's the route they're going, I'm interested in that. But the whole, the ballroom dancing and the obsession with the name, I think they need to go a little bit past the surface if they want to succeed.
Yeah, and if that's where they're going with it, with this kind of dual character like we talked about, then they need to get there a little bit faster, or at least let us know that's where they're going. Because, again, I think we agree, that seems like an interesting character to me. He's just a smarmy ballroom dancer, I think, gets go-away heat and not who get his butt kicked. I get the first match, they'll pay to see him get killed, but then they don't want to see him again, is how I think it would go. But he was, he was much better tonight. We agree on that, right? This is the first time we've seen him where we didn't go, oh, my God.
Yeah, and I think it helped that he didn't have to talk a whole lot. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, I just think we've seen him talk so much with so little action that it was time that he actually got physical with somebody. So, I think this was just a better approach for him.
Absolutely, I agree. So let's take this show from start to finish. Again, it aired on March the 22nd, taped on the 19th in Cincinnati, Ohio. We get opening narrating video, and then we open immediately with Miz TV. He's standing in the ring with Randy Orton and Sheamus. He recapped that Ryback had been pulled from the team by Vicky Guerrero, and so he asked who their partner would be. Orton said the choice would be, a man who came down to their aid on Monday when the Shield was ready to pounce. He asked Sheamus if he agreed. Sheamus said absolutely. They didn't necessarily trust the guy, but it was the devil versus the devil you don't, and so they wanted Big Show to be their guy. Big Show made his ring entrance. And Miz kind of went at him at first. He says, that I certainly don't trust you. I don't know about these guys, but when we ended our tag team, you did it by knocking me out. So I trust you about as far as I can throw you. And then Show came back with the strangest line, because I've dated women bigger than you, Miz. And so you should shut up. It's like, what? Okay, I don't know if that's, I guess anytime comedy scares me a little bit because he's been so goofy for so long and just it rings like it's like tin in my ear. But so he settled down from there. He said that he's done something nobody else has, and that's he's been able to knock out a member of the Shield. He said he understood, you know, why they felt like they did, but if they worked together, nothing could stop them. Sheamus said they had war together, and the show was one of the toughest men he faced, but he was concerned that he wouldn't just, you know, why how do I know you won't just bail on us and leave us out there? Show said if that was the guy I was who would just run away, I wouldn't have ever beaten you for the World Heavyweight Championship. That was a really good line. Orton kind of stepped in at that point and was like, all right, guys, you know, we can work it out. That's enough. Miz at this point chimed in and I thought made an outstanding point about how preposterous it was that Orton was the guy who was trying to be the voice of reason. We talked about that earlier. And then finally Booker T came out and said, look, you know, you guys have got to get it together. You've got to know if you can get along. So I'm going to put you in a match, six-man tag match later tonight. Can you dig that sucker? And we went into commercial from there. So, you know, I liked this. I thought the exchange here was good, except for Sheamus. He was out of control at times, and I thought show was good here. But, yeah, it still strikes me as funny how Miz pointed that out. And when he said it, I was like, yeah, you're right. Why the hell is Randy Orton the voice of reason? But, you know, I thought Orton and show were good here. But as we've already said from the very beginning, Sheamus way over the top.
Yeah, I mean, that was really the issue with this segment. I think The Miz tends to talk a little too much at times for, you know, how much this feud needed to develop between these three. I mean, it was like two or three times in between. Usually they just kind of hand off a mic between one another when they have these conversations, but The Miz kind of interjected a few times, and I don't know, it kind of caught me off guard. It seems like when he's hosting The Miz TV, he either talks way too much or not enough, and I think they got to find a better mix there. But I'm basically in agreement with the rest of your comments. I mean, it was, you know, Sheamus being way too Lucky Charms and Orton playing somebody totally out of character for his personality, and Cho was probably the strongest here, you know, despite that seeming unlikely a couple of weeks ago.
After commercial break, at that point, we came back. We got a video of The Shield taking out Ryback last week, Mark Henry's attack on him afterwards. And so Henry made his ring entrance. Zack Ryder's already in the ring, but you can't guess how that one turned out. Yep, Mark Henry squashes Zack Ryder 48 seconds, beats him with the World's Strongest Slam, of course. All of that sets up after the match when he continues to pound on Ryder, hits a couple more World's Strongest Slams on him. He starts yelling at Ryder. He says, how many can you take? I mean, just, you know, doing the Mark Henry crazy bit. At that point, Ryback's music hit, and Ryder beat it out of the ring. He rolled out. We had Mark Henry and Ryback staring down at each other for a little bit, and then they came charging at each other. Ryback is the guy who gets the better, hits a clothesline on Henry. Henry rolls to the floor, backs up the ramp, and kind of half points, half nods to the WrestleMania sign. You know, like I said, the interaction was good, but the ending was kind of flat, I thought, with him kind of half pointing at the sign.
Yeah, if anything, it just seemed kind of half-hearted, like you said. It was kind of a lazy, you know, not very confident point at the WrestleMania sign, but I guess maybe that's what the segment was attempting to do, is, you know, show Mark Henry that Ryback is, you know, a serious contender to take him on. But I still think, you know, they have to, from this point forward, they have to keep them apart, because the more tension they can create for that first, you know, initial bell at WrestleMania, it's going to benefit this match quite a bit.
You're absolutely right there. I'm sure they did this because they felt like they needed to give Ryback some of his heat back after the beatdown last week, and they were stopped from going at each other on Raw. I understand the logic, but at this point, it's, you know, they should have just taken care of that Monday and said, we're putting you two in a match, you know, because WrestleMania is the only place that can contain you. You will stay away from each other, and if either one touches the other, do the fire gimmick and have Mark Henry continue to get under Ryback's skin, and then not be able to touch each other and build to that first lockup. Like you said, that's what they need to do with this. And they can still get there a little bit. Obviously, they're not going to do the no-touch policy at this point, I would guess. But, you know, they should have just taken care of that in some way, since, you know, to stay away from each other. Even if you didn't do it as part of the gimmick, just, you know, that's the only place they can contain you is WrestleMania. You two stay away from each other until then. And you know, have stare-down moments and that sort of thing. But, because that's that's what they need. They need this to be the immovable object versus the unstoppable force. So, and I don't know if they've done that, like you said, by playing it even here and letting them touch each other. But I think with 2 weeks out, you know, granted, the last SmackDown isn't really a show as much as it is a giant, you know, two-hour infomercial. But because they're not even taping that Tuesday night, they tape, well, they're adding on taping to Raw for what little bit there's going to be fresh on SmackDown that week. So yeah, I agree. They need to keep these guys apart and build to that moment so that when they finally lock up, that's what the crowd's going to be gasping for. And again, if you're sleeping on this match, that would be the moment I think when they could surprise you. From there, we went backstage though, where Teddy Long was bragging about, after consulting with Vicky Guerrero, he made the match between Henry and Ryback. Booker was not happy about this, Jake. He was pretty pissed off, and he said, you work for me, not for Vicky Guerrero. And Teddy Long didn't like that at all. He said, slow your role, player. I thought I worked with you. They've been brewing this a little bit for some time now. Is Teddy Long turning heel on, I realize there's nothing here to really give it away, but what do you think happens with this? Is Teddy Long turning heel on Booker T?
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine Teddy Long being a very effective heel. I mean, Booker T can obviously just beat him to a pulp. So, I mean, maybe if you find somebody to take on Booker T physically, I mean, that might make some sense. But I'm really not sure where this is going yet. And I guess that's a good thing about it. There is a little bit of mystery to it as to what the conclusion will be. But they haven't really done much that makes me interested in seeing either of these guys, you know, have any kind of physicality or feud on television. So they're going to have to, make it at least original. I hope they don't just go back to the mundane general manager tropes where they each pick a champion to fight one another for some random stipulation. They got to get outside the box, because if it's just another one of these lame GM battles, I'm kind of bored with it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what bothers me about this, is control for power. You know, I'm the guy who's completely finished with the non-wrestler authority figure. You know, the GM figure is just is done on me. And what I don't want to see is a retread. Like I said, where it's two GMs and they use some sort of proxy to go out there and fight each other. It's too much. After commercial break, we got the Hall of Fame graphic, which this frustrates me to no end that they continue to think there are people watching SmackDown that aren't watching Raw. At least a number significant enough to matter. They only showed five of the people in the graphic and then showed Booker T's video, which, I mean, you know, it's fine on some level, but it's just like, really, just show all six and be done with it. But Dolph Ziggler came out after that. Jake and I discussed Booker T's interest in the Hall of Fame thoroughly in .NET Weekly, so if you're a member, check that out. And if you're not a member, sign up and you can hear what we thought about it. But Dolph Ziggler is out next for our second match of the night. Dolph Ziggler defeating Kofi Kingston in 10 minutes and 20 seconds. That was our second match of the night. And, a good match on this, but, you got Big E Langston calls him a distraction at the end. That ends up allowing Ziggler to hit the zigzag, and then Big E gets in the ring and beats up Kofi. You could have booked this in your sleep, right, Jake? I mean, this was one of those things that was like, oh, gee, I wonder how this is going to end. To me, this was as plain as the Zack Ryder and Mark Henry ending.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that coming from a mile away. I mean, they were trying to build up, you know, both Ziggler and Big E here for the WrestleMania match, and I get it. And I think AJ was even, better on commentary than the normal. You know, the Wade Barretts or the Cesaros or somebody who stands out there and says, you know, six words all match. He actually engaged the announced team and actually put over Ziggler and Big E throughout the match. I thought that was probably one of the more effective parts of it. I mean, the Kofi is so down right now, it's really hard to consider a win over him a big deal or you know, like you've made it or something. But, another good win for Ziggler at least, and it was a fun competitive match. I feel bad for Kofi out of this because he's really kind of suffering right now. But I think the Ziggler and Big E and Team Hell No tag match should at least be entertaining. I mean, there's a lot of elements here that kind of fit together that they've booked over the past year, so it could be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the fact they tried to protect Kofi a little bit here. I mean, they made him get, you know, he got over on Big E, which allowed Ziggler to win, but I mean, he got over on Langston, so at least there was something there. It wasn't like Langston knocked him out and then Ziggler, you know, hit him with a zigzag and that was it. There was something there, so they tried to protect Kofi a little bit, and they did it in a way that didn't take any juice off of Ziggler. It was paint by number, as simple as it could be. You know, Kofi's going to get the loss. Lance is going to come in to destroy him and look powerful. I got to tell you, though, I'm looking forward to that tag match at WrestleMania. That might be a really good match.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, I think Kane and Bryan have at least shown that when they're on the same page, they're entertaining. And, Big E and Ziggler, I guess they're kind of an unproven commodity, but we know Ziggler can work his ass off, and Big E can easily match Kane for power. So, it at least looks like they have some interesting elements going into the match part of it, and AJ's involvement, of course, and she's, all the involvement she's had with Team Hell No throughout the year make it, there's some drama elements there too, so it's definitely one of those undercard matches you're probably not going to buy the show for, but you're glad to see it's there.
And you're right, she was pretty good on commentary tonight when she sat in. I don't buy her as much. I thought when she was, when Ziggler would be in trouble and she would show concern, that I thought she struggled with a little bit. But as far as selling, her guys, I thought she was really good at being that sort of manager on commentary. From there, Chris Jericho, we get a video of him harassing Fandango from Monday, where he said his name or all the different kind of silly ways. That was really kind of cute. And then we get now team plug Jericho and Swagger for later. And then after commercial, we get Orton, Sheamus, and Big Show backstage, and they're still arguing, about what's going on and about them being together in the match that they're in. Orton, again, stepped in, tried to be the voice of reason. He said that if they can't put it together and make it work, they would be sitting ducks for the Shield. Sheamus and Show they weren't having it. They really started just shaking their heads, and that was it. I mean, they kind of left these two not liking each other. This was really short, though, Jake. But it was, I don't know, to me the shortness of it was kind of what made it effective, but it's just so weird to me to watch Orton be the guy that matters, or to be the guy that's trying to be the leader of the team. He's so anti-everything, even as a babyface. I don't know, it's so bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, he's the type of character that just kind of plays that he's above it all most of the time. So it's different to see him kind of emotionally getting into the fray and trying to play peacemaker and wanting to get a piece of the Shield. I mean, I guess, in that sense, it's more of a babyface than he's ever been. But it surely seems like it's setting up a heel turn, so that's why it's kind of strange. But the Orton and Big Show, I mean, they were just kind of talking over each other for the entire segment, and then Orton finally broke it up. And it was short, and maybe that did help it, because I mean, I think the whole point of this was to kind of continue that they were struggling to find consensus as a team, and there's still a lot of dissent, and so that worked, and that part of the segment I thought was effective. But the characters still, I mean, they just don't gel well, and maybe that'll improve here as time goes on.
From there, we got a video that recapped Jack Swagger breaking Ricardo Rodriguez's ankle from Monday. Very, just quickly, Jake, and we'll move past and talk about Coulter and Swagger tonight. Ricardo Rodriguez was the best part of that segment Monday night, wasn't he? I mean, he absolutely stole the show.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, he looked like somebody broke his ankle, and it helped, Swagger immensely. I mean, he looked like a badass as a result. So, I still think that, they have a lot of work ahead of them in that feud to make it interesting. Just, the broken ankle is what it is, and it did, build some heat from that segment. But, I mean, as we talk more about what Swagger and Coulter did tonight, I think it's still clear that they still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, because from there we got Swagger and Coulter's entrance right before the commercial break, and when they came back, we got their promo. Swagger opened with, welcome to my America, or his America. Coulter said, what happened to Rodriguez on Monday was unfortunate but necessary. He says, going to pale in comparison to what happened to Del Rio at WrestleMania. He said that they were in Jack Swagger's, I'm sorry, he said, when in Jack Swagger's America, If phones need to be broken, they will be broken. He said he was reminded everyone, including Chris Jericho, of what happens to people who defy what they say. We got the We the People thing, and then Jericho interrupted with his music to make his entrance for our third match. We'll get there in 1 second. And JBL did chime in at one point and say it was a brilliant move to break Ricardo's ankle, so he was healing it up big time there. They've moved so much. I think they realized that the race thing fizzled out really fast, and they've just not recovered from this. There was nothing wrong with culture delivery here. Jay, this was really frustrating to me. It's like it's hard to explain what happened and what was wrong with it, because it's just, I don't know. I don't think that they could. I guess what I'm trying to say is that this feud seems to have lost its way completely. They cannot find their way back. It's almost like WrestleMania has to be the blow-off, because I don't think they can salvage this, even if they gave them something good, because it's stagnated so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of bizarre. I mean, they went from the racial angle to immediately tonight, you know, the just kind of garden variety thugs. I mean, it's just like, well, if you don't agree with everything we say, we might just break your ankle. Like, I mean, that's basically what the gist of what Coulter's promo was. They stopped defining what Jack Swagger's America is. And Swagger hasn't really said more than a couple of words throughout the whole thing. I mean, he says, "We the people," and "Welcome to Jack Swagger's America," about as intensely as he can. And then the rest of it is Coulter, who just hasn't had original material in weeks. So I think that part of it is stalled. And, you know, Cole said on the announced booth that Del Rio was home tending to Ricardo, you know, like he's a nurse or something. So, you know, they're not doing him any favors. I mean, he should have been there to defend his friend's honor, at least you would think, if he's a warrior, and instead he's, you know, bandaging his ankle or something. So I don't know. They don't seem to know what to do with this story. None of the characters are particularly endearing. Ricardo being the only one who at least looked like he had a decent sense of humor about him. And then they just broke his ankle, so obviously he's going to be a completely different character upon his return. So I don't know. It's kind of lost in the woods, and I'm not sure that they can get it back at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. Excuse me. I think what they went wrong possibly is they've tried to use Coulter to get heat on Swagger, but almost none on himself at the same time, and because of that, you know, a good manager obviously can transfer heat, but I think they were trying to. It seems almost like the way they've set this up, they don't want to make Coulter, you know, but so big. It's almost like they're afraid that he's going to overshadow Jack Swagger, and I doubt there's a plan to turn this into a faction. My guess is it's just a one-man act. But it almost feels like that's where this should have gone, because of the way they've had to change the story so much and get away from the race thing, and you know, then it kind of took on some brainwashing sort of angle, I think this story is broken. The Coulter Swagger story is broken, which doesn't help the broken Swagger versus Del Rio story. And if you're on Del Rio's side, I think even his character is kind of broken too. So they didn't have good bases with either of these characters to build a good feud with, and it's just never caught hold. I wish they could do it all over again, because I really thought it had promise, but it is not delivered. What did deliver from a match standpoint was our third match, which started right after that, and it was Jack Swagger defeating Chris Jericho 12 minutes and 21 seconds. Had one commercial break in this, just a really good match. They repeated a lot of what they just did, but I still thought it was good. It was entertaining. They switched it up enough that it didn't feel like a complete retread. And we got the Fandango interference at the end. He came out at first and just danced out to the stage, as much as he dances, and came down to ringside, hung out there, and then, you know, one of those awesome wrestling moments where serendipity just strikes, you had Chris Jericho going for for the Walls of Jericho and Jeff Coulter, because he was there for a second. Coulter distracts the referee when Swagger kicks away from Jericho. There's Fandango to hit him with another, hit Jericho with a kick to the head, knocking him down, and then Swagger hit a Swagger bomb in the corner for the pinfall. I like the finish here because I think you said it best when you said that we needed to see Fandango act, and he acted well here.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think it was time to see him actually perform, some physical, something you would expect from a wrestler in the ring. You know, we've seen him talk, we've seen him, get in people's faces. We know he's over dramatic. We know the basis of his character. Now it's time to see him move forward and get in the ring, and that's going to be the key to advancing his character. You know, the type of every time that veneer cracks, like we talked about earlier, it's another opportunity for him to develop that character, and he's not really going to get that going down the same road with his name and the mispronunciations. I think that bit is over. So I'm interested to see where it goes. I think it has promise, but it could quickly go the way of Del Rio too, where it's just a stereotype that everybody would like to see go away.
And as far as the win for Swagger, unlike where I thought they, Kofi's beat up a lot, and so the win didn't mean as much for Ziggler, but they kind of protected everybody as best they could at that moment by equivocating a little bit. This here with Fandango's interference, to me, this win doesn't mean as much for Swagger. It's like they kind of defeated the purpose here. I know they set up a WrestleMania match now, but I think his interference hurts Swagger's credibility. I mean, not hurts his credibility as far as a net negative, but the win didn't mean as much in this case, whereas I thought Ziggler's win earlier worked out a little bit better because you had you had Kofi at least getting over on Branson who interfered. Does that make sense? I don't feel like Swagger got anything out of this win.
Yeah, not particularly. He was when Fandango's music hit, he had just been drop kicked from the apron to the floor, and then they had the I think it was Jericho hit a bulldog and was going for a lion salt when Fandango kicked him.
Yeah, that's right.
So, he was in position for the win multiple times throughout the match. Jericho was, and it was either Fandango or Coulter's interference that defended the victory. So, I mean, they definitely put Jericho over strong here as far as during the match, and obviously he ended up taking the loss. But yeah, there wasn't a whole lot to gain here for Swagger. He definitely didn't pick much up in that match. He looked physically beaten a couple of times, as a matter of fact.
And, of course, post-match we had the attack from Fandango. We just pounced on Jericho and beat him down and screamed him to say his name and whatnot, and then danced, kind of recomposed himself and danced back up the stage with his lady. Anything else we need to cover about that? I think we covered it pretty good at the beginning, but anything that you wanted to say about it?
No, I think the top rope leg drop looked pretty good. Yeah, I mean, we covered the rest of it earlier.
Yeah, you're right. The leg drop did look really good. So, Johnny Curtis, I think, can work. So, I'm hoping they have a plan for this character, and we get to see this blossom now that he's in an actual feud with Jericho, because it's been a bust, and I like Johnny Curtis. I think he's got real potential. We got Michael Cole plugging John Cena. I'm sorry, I skipped the whole spot there. Well, from there, we went backstage. Matt Stryker interviewed Big Show. Big Show a little bit over the top here, talking about putting his whole heart in the WrestleMania match, and said that Sheamus and Orton should just trust him as much as they trust each other. He asked Stryker to trust him. It wasn't silly so much, Jake, as it was. I mean, it was borderline. I thought it was okay, but it was borderline. It was dangerous and close to silly.
Yeah, he really turned it down here. I mean, he was all fired up earlier in the show and defending himself. He wasn't listening to any of Sheamus' arguments, and now he was, completely contrite and overly sincere. So, if you went into this hoping that Big Show was, was a bullshitter, I think he kind of proved that here at least. He took it way too seriously and went completely the opposite direction from earlier. So, yeah, it was. I thought it was entertaining, at least. I think he hit the right tone to keep this in doubt.
From there, we got Cole plugging Cena's appearance on Muscle and Fitness Magazine and aired the Rock vs. Cena video package. That's really good. People should check out if you haven't had a chance to see it yet. Bella Twins and Dean Lowe Scholars were in the ring. Lowe Scholars cut a promo, so they bought the crowd a special gift. Sandow said that he and his best friend were happy to introduce the class to the Divas Division and continue to be completely obsequious. I can't even say that word. Say that word for me.
It's obsequious. I was trying to put
obsequious.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I can't even say it. And all the hillbilly haters out there just had a great moment. But anyway, so they introduced the Bella Twins. Obviously, they put the Bella Twins over is what we're getting at here. And then Tensai, or Sweet Tea, Brodus Clay and the Funkadactyls out for our fourth match. No contest. Brodus Clay and Tensai versus Team Road Scholars is in a no contest. The women end up in a fight, and all hell breaks loose from there. It's an 8-minute mixed tag match at WrestleMania, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I posted in the report. I'm like, man, they're making this pretty obvious. But, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot even to report on here. It was just over before it started, more or less. So, but they appear to be getting these eight people into a undercard match, and I guess, you know, maybe it'll be okay. I have no idea what to expect from it.
Then we got to the promo in the show. This is where I really wanted to stab Sheamus with a pair of scissors. I realized he was mocking Big Show, but like you said, it was the wrong tone. We have Matt Stryker trying to talk to Sheamus or Randy Orton about, you know, Big Show again and also the trust thing. He said that they also trusted Big Show as much as they trust each other. He said that, and then Sheamus goes, you know, I trust Big Show as much as I trust him. You could trust me. And walked off, and then Stryker tried to throw it back, and he came back and was like, no, you can trust me. And you know, just really laid it on thick, and the tone about it was all wrong. I know what he was trying to do, and what he was trying to do was not necessarily the wrong thing, but he failed to do what he was trying to do, and it just rang hollow and weird to me.
Yeah, I had to go back and watch this a second time just to catch the full, you know, the facial expressions and the tone and everything that Sheamus put out here. Because, like, especially that last moment where, you know, he says, you can trust me, and then he walked off screen for a moment out of frame and then came back and said, no, really, trust me. And he, you know, the words and the smile, you know, said, trust me, but the eyes said, I'm going to shove you into my van and drive away. Like, he had the creepiest,
right,
weirdest eyes on his, you know, in the look. And if you go back and watch it, you'll probably see it. But, man, it was just bizarre. And Sheamus is way overselling this. And I'm not sure if that's, you know, what he was instructed to try to do, but it just came across as creepy to me.
Yeah, it was, like I said, I know what he was trying to do. It was bad. It was really, really, really bad. But that's, you know, it was what it was, and God, I hope they don't show that again on Monday. I hope somebody looks at that and goes, oh, we'll try to do this again to see if we can get it right on Raw. From there, we went to the ring. Antonio Cesaro was there. Wade Barrett joined the announced team. Miz made his ring entrance for our fifth match of the night. The Miz defeats Antonio Cesaro in 2 minutes and 28 seconds with the weakest figure four in the history of professional wrestling. Jake, I don't even know what to say about the match, but we get Miz staring down with Wade Barrett, and then, you know, to show how much of a badass he is, he put on the weak figure four again. I'm going to start calling it the figure 3.9 just out of principle. And then finally, you know, Miz lets go and starts yelling at Barrett before leaving the area. What the hell? Now Miz is a total badass, his figure four looks so bad. What are they doing here?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, why Cesaro? Couldn't you have stuck Primo out there or something? I mean, why was it necessary to have Cesaro lose? I mean, he's already lost like two or three non-title matches in a row to various, you know, upper mid-card opponents like Del Rio or, you know, whoever else, Orton a couple of times. I mean, they're really kind of putting the brakes on him lately, and that's kind of a bummer. But the Miz just makes no sense. I mean, they're really forcing this babyface character on everybody. And nobody reacted to the figure fours. Nobody really cared about him jawing with Barrett, who is another champion who, you know, continues to get almost no attention. So this whole thing was just kind of a silencer on the crowd. I don't think anybody really cared about it.
Yeah, I didn't get it. I don't get what they're doing with Miz. I don't get what they're doing with Cesaro. I don't get what they're doing with Barrett. I don't get it. I don't get any of it. What about it don't you get? None of it. I don't understand any of what happened here. I don't know why you have your U.S. champion writhing around in pain, your heel U.S. champion writhing around in pain in the ring to take a guy who's been, I don't even know if you can even use the word successful as a babyface. His character has just continued to be not giving us a reason once to cheer for him other than he was in the Marine. That seems to be it. And then Barrett is just as bland as he could possibly be. He came back with so much promise, and it's just blah from these guys. I don't get it. I don't get a moment of what they're doing here. But at any rate, from there we got a recap of Triple H and Brock Lesnar segment, how all that played out. Randy Orton and Sheamus were out before the commercial break. Big Show out with them after the break. 3MB made their entrance for our sixth and final match of the night. Sheamus, Big Show, and Orton defeating Team 3MB at 5 minutes and 20 seconds. Sheamus tagging himself in on Big Show at the end and hitting a bro kick to get the win on Slater, but Big Show knocked out McIntyre in the process. That led to those two arguing. Well, let's stop there real quick on the match. It was a fine match. It was a well wrestled match for a 5 minute match or whatever. I thought they had the ending paced out really well and whatnot, and everybody played their part. But you said the best in your coverage. It's like, yeah, but it's hard to really get into because nobody believes Team 3MB could go out there. Like if you and I and Pruitt got together and put a tag team together and they put us in the ring with 3MB, they would just assume 3MB was going to job.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Sheamus was beating the crap out of all three of these guys by himself.
Right.
Raw, like, repeatedly. So I don't understand why the tune-up to figure out if they're going to gel as a team would be against, guys that they could probably steamroll by themselves. I mean, and JBL pointed it out. Like, on any other night, these guys would just roll right over. It's just like, well, what, why give that away on commentary? Like, what, you just took 90% of the steam right out of the match. But I don't know. It seemed doomed from the start, and it didn't really go up from there.
Yeah, and just for the record, part of the reason why we crap all over 3MB is because we like McIntyre and Slater and Mahal. I mean, we like them individually. I don't know that I like Slater as much as you do necessarily, but we like them. They just, this gimmick is terrible, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Slater can wrestle. I thought every gimmick he's had since he started sucked. And Mahal had some promise when he started, and he quickly went off a cliff, too. I mean, it just seems like these guys can't get a character that works. And the air guitar thing certainly was not the answer to that question.
Then we get the Shield music hits. They come down to the ring while Sheamus and Big Show are fighting and arguing, shoving on each other. Orton steps in, gets them to split up as the Shield comes down. They finally get it together, decide that they better, watch each other's backs just as the Shield gets to the ring. So the Shield decides, never mind, and heads back up through the crowd. And that's where we went off the air with Michael Cole questioning what the loyalties were to that tag team. And, I thought it was a good close to the show. I know you didn't think that the Shield showing up was as impactful. But, from a storytelling standpoint of trying to develop some sort of tension, I mean, they did a better job here than they did with Sheamus going all silly in the backstage area.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it wasn't as impactful as what they did on Monday because, they had Ryback stripped out of the match. They had Orton and Sheamus outnumbered with the Shield kind of bearing down on him. And then you had, the show coming to the rescue. And then, now they finally announced the match. And, they kind of redid the same spot again where, it's just the Shield coming through the crowd and making, they look intimidating. And then they get to the ring and they walk away. So, I don't know. It didn't seem seem nearly as good as it was on Monday. So I thought it was kind of a mistake to redo the same spot. But I guess we'll see what happens going forward. I mean, I like this match. I think it'll be fun to watch. And I think, you know, getting a heel turn out of this from somebody, whether it's whether it's Show kind of turning on the team, or if it's we get a surprise and it's Orton like you've been predicting for such a long time, I think it'll be worthwhile anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if they have it in the match. I think it's going to be tough to pull off on this one. I've been kind of made to believe that by some arguments, but I do think we get the first idea was like, oh, okay, yeah, now he's going to turn. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if I'll predict it in the match like I have been, but it's I think we're going to see something that leads us down that road. And that's where we went off with the show, Jake. They've got one real SmackDown left, two Raws left for the build for WrestleMania. Again, the SmackDown, the Friday before Sunday's WrestleMania, might be a match or two at most. It'll be just a load of videos and hype for WrestleMania and scenes from Access and that sort of thing, which is fine. But it basically means they've got three shows left. Where are you right now on a scale of 1 to 10 for your excitement of WrestleMania, 1 being not interested at all, 10 being, oh my God, I wish it was tomorrow? Where are you right now?
You know, I would say I'm 7, close to 8 at this point. I think there's a lot of great matches in this card. I think you're going to get your money's worth from ordering it. You know, there's going to be a lot of great action on the show. But at the same time, I think, you know, they might have cost themselves a lot of money with some of these decisions. You know, especially with Swagger and Coulter and how that's all shaken out and how Punk and Taker took kind of a weird direction that's not nearly as satisfying as I think the original one would have been. But, you know, I'm still going to order the show regardless, and I'm still looking forward to all these matches. But I think it could have been a lot better with just a few tweaks.
Yeah, I'm probably the same place you are right now. 7, 7.5 is what I was going to go with. And you could probably give, what, 5 of that to the fact that it's WrestleMania? You know, that's what they've done with the build, is that on a scale of 1 to 10, you get spotted a 5 because it's WrestleMania, and all you've managed to do is a 2.5 build. You know, that's kind of where I am on this, is that I'm excited, yes, because WrestleMania looks to be a good card, but they've not set it up the way that it could be. It's like, I think we're going to enjoy the show. I think when the show goes off the air, it's going to be like, yeah, that was a good WrestleMania. I'm not necessarily predicting a great WrestleMania, but I think it'll be a satisfying Mania based on what we'll see. But, you know, but a lot of that is, okay, it's just WrestleMania, and I know we're going to get the longer show, and the stuff means more guys go out there, and they're allowed to do a little bit more, and it's usually a well-booked show as far as how it's paced out and whatnot. I mean, there's exceptions to every rule, of course, but this looks to be an opportunity for them to have a really good WrestleMania, but they've just not put the effort into it. It doesn't feel like they've put the effort into it that the matches deserve, and where they have, like you said, with the Punk and Taker story, it's kind of veered to one side a little bit and not going down what would be probably the better way of doing it. And, you know, there's little problems here and there. But, I think it's going to be a good card. I at this point, if someone said, you know, hey, it's the most expensive pay-per-view, should I get it? I think at this point I would say, yeah, I think you're probably in for a good enough card. It's WrestleMania. You know there's going to be something special that happens. Get it. I mean, I can't think of a reason not to buy WrestleMania at this point. Can you?
No, like I said, I'm really looking forward to the action. I think we're going to, you know, they managed to line people up in a way that they're going to have a lot of good and potentially great matches on this card. So I would say order it. You know, I mean, if you're like me and you're just slightly disappointed by some of the storytelling, I mean, that's no reason not to order this card, because I think, you know, the reason people tune into this is for the great action, and I still think it's going to be there.
There will be a whole slate of audio available that weekend. I will be covering Ring of Honor shows. I think we've got someone who's going to be covering the Dragon Gate shows. I mean, it's going to be a WrestleMania-heavy weekend, or wrestling-heavy weekend, obviously, all WrestleMania, All leading up to that night, Jason Powell and I will have live coverage of the show that night as well, and an audio review afterwards. We usually have somebody on special. There'll be a preview of predictions for that show. There's going to be a ton of audio that weekend, and almost all of it's going to be exclusive to our members. So sign up right now. Your 30-day membership will carry you all the way through WrestleMania and beyond. You'll get an opportunity to see, you know, what we can provide at the best time of year for professional wrestling as we go into WrestleMania. That's all the time Jake and I have this week. So we will see you back here next week. Sign up to be a .NET member right now at permawrestling.net. Thank you, everyone, for your support of the .NET site. We really do appreciate it. Jake and I will be back next week for another review of WWE SmackDown. Until then, everyone, have a great weekend, and take care.